Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. Of course, this is 1080 AM and 95.1 FM, the one. Oh, what a beautiful morning. This is May 16th, and the year is 2018. And I finally got my motorcycle out and took a little bit of a trip around Northfield. And I'll tell you, the blossoming of the trees smells good, looks good, feels good. It is just fantastic. Enjoy your day today. I have a guest this morning that has been my guest on more than one occasion, and he always has something to say, and it's always interesting. Dave Bates is here. He lives a little bit west of Faribault, Minnesota, on the lake. And, of course, he is a biplane owner and a flyer. But there's a lot more to Dave Bates than just being a pilot. And let's get to Dave right away and say, good morning, David.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in again.
Yes, such a beautiful day. Absolutely gorgeous.
When we were when I invited you to come back, you said, well, what are we going to talk about? And I said, Dave, with you, there's always something to talk about, so I don't worry about it. And, of course, the whole show is about the individual whom I have as a guest. And one of the things I said about you to a couple of people is that what I like about Dave is I can ask a question and leave and go get a cup of coffee and come back, and you're still going on about that topic. And you mentioned a few things you do want to talk about. And one of those things is a relative of yours. Mm-hmm. And she was a nun, and she just passed away, and you went to the funeral.
Yep.
And what type of a funeral do they have for a woman that's in her 90s and a nun?
Yeah. Well, it was Sister Mary Bates. She's my dad's sister. There were 12 kids in the family, typical Wisconsin cheesehead family, you know. All of them grew up in the Depression, and all of them were very successful. Well, she became a nun in 1950, a Franciscan nun. Their group of perpetual prayer is based in La Crosse. So, and she was always, you know, the kiddie's pal. I mean, she just had, there was a aura about it. I mean, she taught school. She traveled the world. She taught English to the Spanish people. She taught American to the Mexicans. She had been around the world. Then she got involved, of course, with the hospital work in La Crosse. It's now a Mayo System hospital, and it's still called the Franciscan Healthcare Hospital. It was started, of course, back in the 1800s by the Franciscan nuns of perpetual prayer. And it's a fantastic group of women. I mean, you can see where, in all fairness, I'll point blank, the ones that make the Catholic Church really run and developed all the hospitals and schools, you know, throughout our country, it was the women. You know, the priests may have ran the show, but it was the gals that ran, you know, really took care of everything. And they were the unsung heroes. And to go down there, well, I'll go back to the start. Sister's health was kind of failing. She was kind of running out of gas. And so my wife's a neurologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. So we'd go over and see her the past month or two. But she always was very upbeat. Well, last Saturday, not this past one, but the last Saturday, got a call from one of my relatives and said, Sister's in starting to go down that slippery slope. I think it's going to be close. It's time, I think, this time.
Did you ever refer to her as Aunt Mary?
No, it was always Sister.
Okay.
Among us, it was always just Sister. Kind of, you know, and that's because, of course, they're noted. You know, priests are Father David.
Well, my uncle was a priest.
Okay.
And Father Clyde is what he went by.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd always say Uncle Clyde.
Oh, no, we were always, as you know, from basically some of the first family reunions, and we had one every year. We have this, the last Sunday of June is the Bates family reunion, and it's always Sister or Sister Mary. And what's so funny is we had three Mary Bateses. My mother happened to be Mary Elizabeth, so she was a Mary Bates. My uncle Carl Bates married a Mary, so there was a Mary Bates. And, of course, then we had sisters. So we had three Mary. So that's how we, you know, the others were Aunt Mary, and then Sister Mary.
Sister Mary, yeah. All right. She passed away?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 days ago.
Okay.
But we had gone over to see her.
Okay.
And she was in intensive care. And in all fairness, my wife, you know, again, she, you know, most of her patients aren't, you know, doing well. You know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's are especially. And she said, you know, sisters, we may be just ending up kind of holding hands and talking to her, and maybe she'll hear us, maybe she won't, type visit. We'll be in there only for about 10, 15 minutes. I says, no, you know, it's just one of those things that everybody should do. You visit the sick, and it ain't easy. You know, nobody wants to be in there when somebody's, you know, at the end of their life. It's just, it's not comfortable. You know, it's just something we all struggle with. Okay. So I says, nope, got to go. Sister was always there for me. Good Lord. It was because of, you know, her prayers. I maintain it plain and simple. I went through all these ups and downs, and I mean physically up and downs with airplanes and race cars and whatever. So, because she always had me on her prayer bead. She says, when I came to your name, I lasted a little longer, David, because you've got those crazy, stupid hobbies, you know, that you men always do. Well, anyway, we went over to see her, and she had, as I told her what it looked like, quite an apparatus, but basically it's like a full-faced World War II or jet pilot face mask. Her lungs had filled so much with fluid that she could not breathe on her own. So they had this breathing apparatus. Now, it was not, you know, down her throat. It's just basically a mask that pressurizes, depressurizes, and they can sneak it off for a little bit. She can take a few breaths, but then it's got to come back on, and it's quite an apparatus. In fact, when I saw her, she was sitting up. Of course, she can't speak because, you know, she's under the mask, but she had a tablet. And I swear, you know, again, all those nuns, and I still have marks on my fingers from their rulers, because if they were mad at you, they'd hit you with the little brass edge. If they were just getting your attention, you got the wooden edge, see. And that was learning cursive, right? Which I guess they quit doing, but now in many parts of the country, they're coming back to it. Doing, you know, again, coming back. But anyway, she had a tablet, and we were surprised to see her sitting up. So we come in, and, oh, sister, you're looking wonderful, you know, da-da-da. And she smiled, and she'd write down, Davy, you look good. Are you losing some weight? I swear my mother was right behind her. And, I've actually lost. Oh, you're looking good, you know. Oh, Paula, how's the world travels? How's the neurologist business, you know? And of course, she was an administrator of that hospital, so they would, you know, talk, and then, you know, sister would go. And we were there for almost 45 minutes. And, I mean, she was animated and everything, and it was wonderful. But then she could see her eyes were getting a little heavy, and, you know, she was getting fatigued. So even Paula said, sister, we need to go now. You need your rest, you know, and that. And so she gave me a hug, and as I left the room, I turned, and she blew me a kiss, and I blew her a kiss. That's the last time I saw her alive. That was on a Saturday. And that following Monday at 9:45, she passed away. My cousin put out the message right away. I happened to catch my email, and I was actually put back because even as we walked out, and Paula says, you know, I don't know how those nuns can do it. And it's like your aunt told us one time, because at St. Mary's here in Rochester, we have 8, 10 of these, you know, Franciscan nuns. They're over 100 years old, and they're still working a daily routine. You know, I don't know how they do it. And so, and she says, I can remember asking Sister Mary, how do you nuns live so long? And sister growing up with 12 brothers and sisters on a farm, simply, oh, simple. We don't have any awful husbands and no bratty kids. And, I mean, she was just that type of an earthy person.
And, of course, they didn't drink and they didn't smoke.
No, exactly. And they had such a focused life, you know, all their basic needs were taken care of. Well, anyway, what happened then was we were quite put back because my wife, you know, typical northern Italian, she says, what the heck? You find out. She was doing good. I wondered, did she have a cardiac collapse or something? You know, just, you know, she, no, I don't believe, you know. Well, the funeral then was yesterday. And so I went over. Paula couldn't make it because she had some patients flying in from Europe. And you just don't, you know, when people fly in from Europe, you have to see them. You know, yeah. And that was all planned. And so she sent her condolences and some flowers. But I got over there and I met with Sister Helen. who was the power of attorney. I says, I got to the convent. And this is, and I'll tell you a little bit about how beer affected at a convent, which is a wonderful story. But anyway, I got there, I asked Sister Helen, I said, all right, what happened to Sister Mary? How'd she tip over so quick? And she said, well, you know, her lymphomic cancer was back. I says, well, yeah, but she didn't say. She didn't tell us either. She made the doctors, she said she was going to put a fatwa on them if they would tell anybody. Her lymphomic cancer totally metastasized through her throat and her lungs. As she told me, you know, when I was with her the last minutes, I'm toast, you know.
I'm toast.
That's why. It wasn't the pneumonia came in after, you know, needless to say. And so she was ready, you know, to go to heaven, hopefully, and all this. And she says, nope, it's time for me to take the mask off. She was writing, you know. And then Sister Selin said, well, you don't want to go on a Sunday. Let's do it on a beautiful Monday morning, you know, and we'll all come in here. So that's what they did. The nuns came around her bed. Sister Mary undid the mask herself. She lasted about a breath and a half, closed her eyes, and actually had a smile on her face. And, I mean, it was, I'm sure, a perfect Norman Rockwell send-off. So that's how that happened. Then we get to the funeral. Okay. So, you know, how do the nuns, you know, is that some sacred ceremony? Do they all do chants? And, oh, boy, this sounds like a typical boring type deal. You know, I'm your typical knee-bender Catholic. I don't want to spend too much time in church. I was never so impressed with a ceremony. First, it's at their chapel, okay? And it's called the Chapel of Perpetual Prayer. They've been doing it now for 142 years. There's somebody 24/7 in there praying. And I remember, oh, God, quite a few years ago, my wife and I were over there, and Sister showed us a secret little door that goes behind the altar. And here's another little mini altar where there's somebody always there. But then we asked, you know, there aren't that many nuns anymore. And so who do you get to do it? Oh, we have all sorts of lay people, retired people, and that come in here and continue this tradition. And I said, that's a wonderful deal. Well, they had the funeral ceremony. They had basically a chamber orchestra in there with a harp, violins, bass, cellos. They had a choir, a professional choir in there. The music was not your typical, boring, typical church music. It was upbeat. Sister had put it all together. It was a celebration of life. Because, as Red Skelton said, there's no need of us to ever worry about dying because nobody gets out of here alive anyway. So it was just a wonderful ceremony. And they told stories how she loved to make dandelion wine and leaves into the lettuce or into the salads. And how during the Depression they made a lot of dandelion wine. But it was very appropriate because then after the ceremony, which was just a normal mass, but everything, the readings, she had picked out everything, was all choreographed. It was just a nice feel-good ceremony. We all went out to the Cemetery of the Hemans, right under Granddad's Bluff. My God, what a beautiful spot. And that's where all the sisters and plus other Catholics are buried. So we had a nice ceremony out there. And the place, of course, was covered with dandelions. She insisted nobody sprays our dandelions. And it was, again, only 15, 20 minutes. They simply had some of the nuns do some stories about her and all that. And we had some readings. A priest, of course, blessed the ground and the casket. They lowered in there. And I have to admit, I thought of something. And I reached down. I picked up a couple of dandelion, you know, the yellow beautiful heads. They were all coming out, you know, just spectacular day yesterday. And I flipped them in on top of her casket for her. And needless to say, the whole Bates clan was there. There had to be over 100 people. Again, you know, with the in-laws, outlaws, and, you know, the nephews and nieces, and still four of her brothers and sisters still alive. So everybody then flipped dandelions on the casket. So it was literally covered in there with the dandelion. So it was really, and then we went back for a beautiful meal at the convent. And one thing, their chapel, which is a standalone church, oh my God, it's a German Gothic, green tiled with fancy, it was built by the Heilemann family. Well, Wayne, you and I can remember old style beer when it was popular.
In La Crosse.
In La Crosse. And those big old, you know, six pack that where they kept their grains are still there, painted up. The family paid for that. The Heilemann family. And it is absolutely a German Gothic. They give tours all the time. It is phenomenal inside. If you want to see what a, after the medieval cathedrals, you know, they did that for hundreds of years in Europe. Then they got into some of this Gothic type of churches that were built in the 16, 1700s, 1800s. That's what this church is. Just, I mean, I'm your typical Catholic boy in there. I wasn't watching the Mass. My head was bouncing all over looking at statues and how they made the plaster look like marble and, oh, my God, the stenciling and the stained glass. And there's a couple stained glass deals showing the ancient brewing process because, again, monks developed beer for one simple reason. The water wasn't safe.
Yeah.
Okay? That's why beer, that's why still to this day in Germany, we go over there quite often, beer is considered a food source. Kids can legally drink beer at age 16. Can't get their driver's licenses until 18. But so anyway, we had a wonderful send-off for my aunt, and I guess in all fairness, I wanted to bring it up. We'll get into some airplanes and all this other stuff, but you know, it all comes down to there's always the basics of our lives. I'm 64, you're a little older, and I know I didn't have any of this on my mind when I was in my 30s. You know, it was, you know, I was invisible and built bulletproof back then, but as you see your relatives and friends and, you know, listed in the obits and things like that, you realize that there is a cycle of the life. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I'll tell you what, the nuns, it was not stuffy. It was joyous. And, man, like I say, everybody had a tear in their eye at times, of course, because you're remembering all the good stuff. And you're going to see him again.
I mean, was it a requiem mass, high mass, low mass?
Oh, yeah, it was a requiem high mass, but again.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That took a while.
Yes. But we were, but again, only an hour. Boy, the songs were fantastic. And I always remember my sister, because she'd always poke at my chest, you know. And she'd always, you know, like, you know, for, you know, getting married to this neurologist. Now, don't screw it up, you know, kid. And I said, sister, what do you think about all this religion and all this stuff in the world? And I remember we came back from Myanmar, in other words, Burma. And I says, I saw Buddhas. I saw Buddha lying down, Buddha standing up. I saw Buddhists all over. I went through temples. Aren't they good people too? She says, absolutely. If I hadn't grown up a German Catholic over in Durand, Wisconsin, I'd want to be a Buddhist priest. I says, really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Buddhists are one of the five major religions. They're the only ones that have never started a war. They've been involved a couple times, but have never started a war. Can't say that about us Christians. Good Lord, we're usually involved in wars and start them half the time. So she says, I think they're one of the best people. I'd want to be one of those. And then she always said, remember, religion is man-made. Keep a wary eye on religion, but you keep your faith in your heart so nobody can touch what you believe.
Spirit. You got to have spirit.
That's right.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation with Dave Bates, making his fifth appearance, I think, today on the Wayne Eddy Affair. A lot of things to talk about. At 22 past 9 o'clock, a reminder, you have 38 minutes to get to the Quarterback Club for a full breakfast. And, boy, they'll give you whatever you want. Over easy, like I like them, sunny side up. And toast, wheat or white, and of course bacon, or do you want ham, or do you want sausages? They make it all for breakfast, pancakes, waffles, you name it. If you have a hearty appetite breakfast time, the place to go is, of course, the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. And don't forget, they do catering, and if you're having a graduation party, why go through all that work and expense when you can call Dale Finger and have him set up a wonderful graduation party with any types of food that you can imagine. It is 9:23. We will be back with Dave Bates in just a moment.
At Harry Brown's Family Automotive, we really do love sunshine and Chevrolet and great deals. For example, right now you'll get up to $12,000 off MSRP on 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT. Why drive anything but the most dependable? Or get up to $4,000 off MSRP on the incredibly popular 2018 Chevy Equinox LT SUV. Everything you need, everything you want. Chevy, find new roads. Harry Brown's Family Automotive in Faribault. Online at harrybrownsgm.com. Offers end 5/31/18. Silverado stock number 89920. Equinox 89783.
Okay, Harry Brown's in Faribault. And that reminds me, Dave Bates, Of course, you've got a biplane, a Stearman, parked in the hangar down in Faribault at the Faribault City Airport. Mm-hmm. And there's a front page story in regards to the Faribault Airport. And you've been there for quite a few years. You know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. And you knew the sweetheart, the Liz
Stolfus.
Yeah, and she was there as a young woman.
Oh, yes.
And got involved in airplanes back in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what's going on, and do you know any of the history of the Faribault Airport?
Well, a little bit. Actually, our grandfather of the airport is Jim Glynn. I think he just turned 90. In fact, one of the hangars that he brought from the old airport to the current location is an original old T hangar made out of wood and everything. And, of course, he tore it all apart, brought it over, and put it together. And that hangar's got to be 60, 70 years old.
Where was the old airport?
Well, the old airport used to be located where the Faribault Middle School is now. And, of course, that was an ideal spot because it was high ground. And, in fact, that's where you'll see an antenna farm, you know, for radio stations and, good Lord, whatever. And so, needless to say, because it was a good spot for a whole lot of other things that were, at that time, more important than just an airport for people with their hobby airplanes, because there was no commercial use at that point, really. They had used it to, say, land some crop sprayers and few, but nobody was really using it as commercial operations. In fact, it was grass strips and things like that. So, basically, they just either tore down the hangars or a few people moved them. And they gave them, of course, you know, sometimes the wisdom, and we can debate that, but anyway, the land then that they used then for the airport, where its current location, as Jim Glynn, you know, who's one of our old connoisseurs of history for Rice County, he showed me, it was a duck slough, is what it was. So, but they said, well, you can have that. That'll be the airport. So they filled it in, and in fact, it used to be a dump at one time, but they filled it in. We always had, high water problems, and the fuel system, in fact, that's in there right now has been in and out because the tanks would rust, and we'd get water in our fuel in the airplanes, and on takeoff, when your CG shifts, the water's heavier, so it moves back towards the outlet of the fuel tank, and I had that happen to me twice, where all of a sudden, rum bum bum bum, engine quits on takeoff. That's when your heart pitter-patters.
I guess so.
But anyway, and they had it tore up again this spring. Well, I just happened to come into your radio station here, and I see the newspaper, big article on front page, about the Faribault Airport. In fact, there's pictures of rare aircraft and North Memorial and all this. And I, you know, oh, wonderful. And I heard my friend Stein, who runs Stein Aviation at Lakeville, was moving in. Now, the key to this is, I guess you go back maybe about 10, 15 years in that ballpark, the Faribault area swimming pool was shut down by the state. Basically, it was just kind of a bend in the river, and they kind of let the river water in and let the river water out. Well, the state kind of said, you know, that's really not a good municipal swimming pool. You guys got to come out of the 1800s. Well, okay, where's the money going to come then for a water park? Well, at the city council meetings, I was there. Some of the people would stand up and legitimately go, hey, why are we spending all this money on an airport? All it is are these rich guys that work for Northwest Airlines with their hobby-type airplanes. You know, let's just close down that airport. We're spending $300,000 to $400,000 a year to maintain it, and we can't have a swimming pool for our kids? Oh, boy. You know, they're right. I mean, the town's 20,000 people. Got to have a swimming pool or a water park. And it looked pretty scary for a while. Well, luckily, the mayor, John Janinski, he got a hold of me. And what do you think, Dave? Well, you know, every city's got to have a, you know, potentially an airport and da-da-da-da-da. You really need a way to have both, you know. And by George, thank goodness, the city council passed a bonding bill. And now we've had, you know, a beautiful water park. So that kind of took the heat off the airport. But what they did to help get that bonding bill, they sold off a bunch of land. The better land at the airport, and that's at housing development that's just to the south of the airport. Plus, we have the Army Reserve building out there, and that used to be airport land. So getting those funds helped build the, you know, the swimming pool and helped take care of the airport, and that's okay. Well, the good news is, and I see now, over the past few years, we've had some legitimate commercial enterprises come in. Rare Aircraft, which stands for Roy's Antique Repair or Airplane Restoration Enterprises, Rare Aircraft, good acronym, and Cross Country Soaring, which Don runs two gliders. You see him flying all the time out there.
Don has been my guest a couple of times.
Yep.
I've been on the glider. I did both the tag rope and also the slingshot.
Ah, oh my goodness. I've never been in a glider. See, I'm too scared because when things get quiet with me, I'm looking for someplace, you know, soft and cheap to land. Okay. And then, and the big one that happened here this spring, North Memorial Hospital. Okay, that whole system. They bought one of the commercial hangars that was built by a person who then just kept his, you know, fancy airplane, but he passed away. And so they bought it, and they run, you probably see those jet, basically turbine-powered helicopters roaring in and out of there, retractable gear, you know, very fast. And they're constantly moving people. They're 24/7 out there. There's people there 24/7. So that has legitimized.
Now, who do they service, the helicopters?
Oh, the helicopter services District 1 Hospital and I think the one in New Prague, and, of course, everything up in the city's North Memorial.
Okay.
And if need be, they'll take people to the Mayo system. I mean, you know, they're, you know, they'll take it to the people to the appropriate places.
That's a very lucrative business to own.
Oh God, yes.
Own a helicopter service.
Yeah. Basically, if you got to take a ride in a medical helicopter, somebody's going to be paying at least a $10,000 bill for your ride.
I had one.
Oh
one
my
time
goodness. Okay.
Down to Rochester.
Ah.
Oh, the bill was ridiculous.
Yes, yes, you know, it is.
The ride was what is it from? Highway 56 and County Road 9.
Right.
What is it, 20 minutes?
Yep.
And the bill, holy cow, if you put it into an hour.
But, of course, they have full life support on board.
Yes, they do.
And I was talking to one of the pilots. He's a younger guy. And I says, how's the job? God, you must have it made. He says, well, I got to fly in sometimes almost zero conditions. Sometimes I even have to set down because I just can't go any further, even with a helicopter. But he says, the biggest thing is you've got somebody that's really having a bad day. If you got to have a helicopter ride to the hospital, not let alone an ambulance, but a helicopter ambulance, you're in tough shape.
Yep.
And he says, you have to become pretty thick-skinned because we lose a lot of people along the way just because you can only do so much in the air. And he says, boy, that's a little tough when you land. And sometimes, you know, there's car crashes. You've got young people, mothers, children injured. He says, if anything, you almost have to have the veteran combat mentality. He says, I'm not a veteran, you know, but I can see where you do your job, fly that helicopter, get them there safe, and then the people in the back end will do their job. And if we all work together, because there's times, he says, when you've got to land on these hospital roofs and you've got 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds and the visibility isn't that good, and those are not ideal landing spots. There's a lot of obstacles and things around the area. So I really give those characters a lot of credit for what they do and the mental stress.
I'm surprised. I know that the Vietnam-era helicopter pilots did go into services on civil base, civilian basis.
Mm-hmm.
But this gentleman that you're talking about, you wonder, where did he learn to fly a helicopter?
Well, I asked him about that, and he simply said, well, I just love helicopters. I got my ratings. I worked for a couple commercial companies. A big one is, of course, your electric line inspection, gas line inspections, you know, the helicopters. You get involved with people that have a lot of money and want, you know, they commute by helicopter, things like that. But he says where the place where you really build a lot of time, and in all fairness, you're hauling the most critical thing there is in this world, a human life. He says that's where I wanted to get to. And so I give those boys, like I say, they don't know. They're like firemen. Their cars are out there at the hangar. I do a lot of walking for exercise around the hangar, and I might be out there at 9:30 at night, and all of a sudden I see the hangar door fly open, and out comes the John Deere little tractor pulling the Jet Ranger, and he's already starting up that turbine engine. It's whining, And I bet you it's not more than 2 seconds after they unhook the tow bar, he's already wheeling down the taxiway, and he doesn't even wait to get on the active runway. He doesn't have to. He's off it goes, and many times he'll see me out there with my little German Shepherd, and he'll just bank right around me in that, and you can feel the air.
What do you think one of those costs?
Oh, easily a used one is like $1.5 million.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Those are fully retractable gear. The gear retract. They can cruise, depending on weather conditions, close to 200 miles an hour.
Oh.
Yeah, these are the Bell Jet. These are the, plus.
Okay.
Plus, they've got all full capacity medical gear. I mean, and again, I'm not a medical person. That's the wife. But I know that they can do everything from life support to, shocking to, they are, those medics that are in there are in constant contact. All the information that comes from the human body of their patient is electronically done to, say the hospital. So the doctors there are saying, give them another 10 cc's of this, and you can just imagine, just like you see on TV.
Yeah.
And, give them the paddles and do this. You're going to have to do a tracheotomy right there, poof. And, in fact, the helicopter pilot says, you know what the unglamorous part of this job is? And I says, well, I don't know what, trying to find something to do during the quiet time? Oh, there's plenty to do, because when a person is in, severe medical condition or from an accident, that it's awful messy. He says, even though they build these special, we still have to go in and sterilize them from, needless to say, people are bleeding, other biofluids and all that. They've got to be cleaned, and not just like you do, Bates, He laughed. He says they have to be, septic clean. We have to go in and basically disinfect everything, which is just, common sense nowadays.
I remember being in the ambulance, and then I didn't know what was going on, but all of a sudden I'm really cold. This happened in February.
Oh, my.
And I'm thinking, why would it be cold out, And then I heard that chopper, and then I realized I was being transferred from the ambulance into the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got on the helicopter, I woke up the next morning. I had 4 strokes.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I was very fortunate. What a great team there is, from the Northfield Hospital to the ambulance service, the helicopter and the medics in there, and then the people at Rochester. Yep. So it's 9:35 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is a gentleman I enjoy listening to, David Bates. Able to describe various things that he has encountered in his life and shares with us that I tremendously enjoy. We will be back in just a moment.
Spring is finally here and summer won't be far behind. We all know this means road trips and road construction. The crew at Witt Brothers Service in Northfield would like to remind everyone that they are going to be open during construction while both 7th and Division Streets surrounding Witt Brothers is repaired. Please call 507-645-7242 to set up your appointment, and they will let you know what driveway will be open for you to use. Don't forget, it is best to have your vehicle checked out before you head out of town on your road trip for a worry-free vacation.
Southern Minnesota women are embracing adventure, and Girlfriends magazine tells their stories in their May issue, available now at locations all around Northfield. Girlfriends magazine has been inspiring, entertaining, and educating women in our region for nearly 10 years. Pick up your copy of their May adventure issue today. To find a location near you, visit online at southernmingirlfriends.com. That's southernmingirlfriends.com. Girlfriends magazine. Where local women turn.
All right, continuing our conversation on this Wednesday at 9:37. Oh, a reminder, the twins are going to be on the air here on the 1 and 1080 AM, 95.1 FM at 11:30 this morning. My guest this morning is Dave Bates, and we're chit-chatting. David, from what I understand, since we're talking about the airport and that it was built on a swamp, and the rich guys, used it to store their airplanes and fly out and in of, and it sounds like it's getting more commercial, and is that a benefit? And it's owned and operated by the city of Faribault, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. It's, in fact, like I say, I've got the Daily News Wednesday front page there, and there's a page of Ben Redman showing some of the biplanes that they restore for people. And he's got approximately, I believe, about 14, 15 skilled craftsmen working there full-time. So there's families, you know, their income, everything's based out of there. We just talked about North Memorial helicopter, medical helicopter operations. The main huge hangar, the FBO, fixed operator base, that's, you know, airplane terms, in other words, the main offices and that's run by Jerry Sears. In fact, he's from Northfield. And he's been in there, oh, good Lord, 10, 15 years. He employs 2-3 mechanics. They do repairs on general aviation airplanes and that for people. And he also, of course, then is an employee of the city. He plows the snow, you know, maintains the airport. So that is there.
Do you know my neighbor, Randy Crystal?
I don't think so. No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, his plane's down there. And, okay. I don't know if he's doing it now, but for years he was the guy that kept the lawn. You know, would go down and do the lot of grass.
Right. He worked, in a sense, for Jerry. Jerry would hire people to do that.
Right.
And so that, you know, there's now Don, again, the soaring, the glider operations.
Yep.
And what's interesting is there's a whole new operation coming in from Lakeville area, and that's Stein Aircraft. And what they do is they were making instrument control panels for all sorts of airplanes, especially home-built airplanes. But now he's evolved that to where he's installing what we call glass cockpits. In other words, just like everything in our lives, everything's computerized. We don't have all the old, you know, gauges you used to see in the World War I, II airplanes and that. So that's what he does in all these commercial airplanes. Well, he's employing 14, almost 20 people. And he has signed all the agreements and everything now. So what they're going to do now at the Faribault Airport, it's basically, as they say, a done deal. The old Quonset hangar that you'd always see sitting there, classic old-looking little hangar, which is in, you know, was thrown up, I think, right during World War II and that, so it was done relatively quick. That's where Don's been running his glider operations. Well, of course, what's he going to do? You know, we don't want to lose him. And like they said in the article here, the city manager said, it's not an either or, I'm quoting him almost, it's both. We want both of them here. So, Don went and got financing. He's going to build, and the city gave him a piece of land, and they're going to run water and sewer to him so he can have, you know, a commercial building. And then he'll move his operations to a new hangar. So another hangar, you know, he pays hangar lease. That all helps, you know, cut the cost to the citizens and that for the airport. Then the city is going to start, could be any time now, this week, next week. They're going to come in and tear down the old hangar. And that's the spot then that a huge, 60,000 square foot big metal building, you know, just a huge building with a big 60 or whatever foot hangar door, that'll be a Stein Aircraft. They bring airplanes in and install these modern cockpits, you know, with all the, you know, Garmin and all the GPS and good Lord, all this fancy stuff that I don't even really, I'm not used to. That's not my era. But that will, you know, bring in all sorts of people. And again, a commercial operations. Plus, the city, with help from the state and everything, they're going to put a whole new aircraft fueling system in. Oh, thank God. So they will put in a state-of-the-art system that will manage the water, you know, groundwater problems that we've been fighting for years at the Faribault Airport around our fuel tanks and stuff like that.
Well, how does water get into the big fuel tanks? I always thought they were on legs.
Well, the thing is, they're buried in the ground.
Okay.
That's kind of the cheaper way to do it.
Like a gas station.
Yes, like a gas station.
Okay.
And they've you know, made pits, and you put the gravel around it, and you have monitors and all that, but you get corrosion, you get a little leakage.
Yep.
And here's one thing that happens. What was it, 2013, the frost level went way low. I'm talking, they said, damn near 6 foot down, which is just unheard of. It was just, that was a cold, long winter. Well, then when you have this saturated water, of course, when water freezes with the ground, things moves and shift, all of a sudden a pipe cracks. So it's not corrosion, but you get the, all of a sudden, you know, people are getting fuel in there, and it just, that's...
Well, that's kind of iffy and scary.
That's yeah, because, you know, if you're driving your car and you have some bad gas, you know, generally, you know, you're away from home, you kick the tire, you growl a little bit, and you got to call the kids or a tow truck or something, but you're not falling out of the sky. And that's the problem with the airplanes is if we get water in our fuel, oh boy, it can be tragic, you know, simple as that. So that's why as the article said here, I guess this week they're letting out bids for the complete new fuel system, and they didn't go into much detail on that, but I'm sure it'll be one that's done correctly, because now that jet fuel that goes into those medical helicopters, you know, needless to say, Faribault wants to sell it, the city, and get the profit. Well, you cannot tolerate any water in the fuel in any aircraft, let alone a medical helicopter. And, you know, we don't want them, say, landing in Lakeville to buy their fuel. They should land in Faribault, because that's and they want to. They want to buy their fuel there. So I see the airport, the community is definitely investing, the city council. But the main thing is, and I've always maintained this, oh, plus we've got the Army Reserve right on the grounds, too. Well, you know, the feds pay their bills because they get our money. So I think we've finally seen the Faribault City Airport mature. Maybe it's appropriate because it was named last year the Liz Stofas Airport. And they've got that new sign up, you know, put up and everything and that. Did she know that? I don't know, because she had passed, you know, before the big ceremony and everything. People talked about it with her and all that. And, of course, she was so humble.
Oh, yeah.
She just, oh, for God's sake, my name doesn't even make, you know, she always, Davey, it doesn't even sound good, you know. Stofas Airport, you know, it doesn't have a good ring to it, you know. And, but she's a legend. I mean, she is known throughout the country as one of those early WASP. Yep. And it's a treasure we have. And so her life story's inside the FBO there.
And it's on KYMN Radio's archives.
There you go.
Because I've had her on the air many times.
God, yes.
Say, I have to take a break, but here's something to think about while we're on break. I would want the airport, it's the city of Faribault, not Rice County's, but I would want in the planning to be able to bring in business executives that have to visit their plant or factory in the Rice County area, for example. We'll be right back.
Rice County Steam and Gas Engines is hosting their 8th annual Armed Forces Day celebration on Saturday and Sunday, May 19th and 20th, starting at 10 a.m. each day. The day will include military reenactments, World War II themed battles, Civil War artillery, weapons demonstrations, military vehicles, plus many more activities for your entertainment. A military swap meet plus food and drink concessions will be available for purchases. Starting May 19th, head 3 miles south of Dundas to the Rice County Steam and Gas Engines grounds for an Armed Forces Day celebration.
Are you in the market for a new home or considering remodeling your current home? Schmidt Homes and Schmidt Homes Remodeling should be your first and last call. Schmidt Homes, known for their innovative designs, uncompromising quality and craftsmanship, superior service, while maintaining their reputation of fairness, honesty, and integrity for over 30 years. They're the only builder in the area to offer an in-house designer and a showroom to make your selection. They have over 30 new building lots available in Northfield. Check out their website at schmidthomes.com for more information.
It's time to get to work in your garden. Make sure you start with the highest quality vegetables and flowers. Stop into Eco Gardens in downtown Northfield and let Howie and Jenny walk you through everything you need for a garden you can be proud of. Eco Gardens is your local, independent, family-owned garden store where they share their vast knowledge with customers in need. During downtown road construction, park on 6th Street along the north side of Eco Gardens and let them help you load up everything your garden needs.
Yeah. I like Eco Gardens, Howard and Jenny, and I already bought some plants from them. I'm trying to attract my hummingbirds. They didn't come back last year. I put my stuff out late, and usually for years and years, they always came right around Memorial Day. I'm going to miss them if I can't attract them. Speaking about attraction, I would assume that a well-developed airport for the community of Faribault, the city you have jet engines on the helicopters, but there's not room there for a jet private plane, is there?
Well, right now, actually, the most of the jet activity that they see are the kids coming in to, say, Shattuck, the private school.
Yeah.
And or, you know, students up here to St. Olaf and Carleton. Or some businesses will come in and out. But the thing is, right now, the airport, Because, again, I have to admit, my biplane only needs about 100 feet to take off. But I think the runway is about 5,000 feet. And they actually need another 500, 600 feet for some of these little larger private jets to comfortably come in and out, especially when the weather gets hot, because the air is thinner, you need more lift, more power, and more runway. And that's in the article that Senator now, John Janinski, is working with the state and the FAA to come in, the article said, $5 million for a couple airports around the area now, because he you know, handles an area. And he said, so we can expand that to allow more businesses to come in, because Faribault now has a active industrial park. Good Lord, I drove by the Faribault Foods Complex. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's huge. And then you've got Sage, you know, a world-class glass manufacturer. They make some super high-tech glass products in there. So the point is, Faribault has come out of the proverbial economic dark ages here in the past 10, 15 years and really moved up along with the Owatonnas and that. And I always remember a little quick story. I guess 30 years ago, actually about 35 years ago, I was looking for a place to live. I was living up in Shakopee, but I had built my hangar. In fact, next to Jim Glynn, I'm, good Lord, and again, a child of the 60s. Here I'm saying I'm one of the oldest aircraft hangar owners. I've been there now for 37 years with my hangar.
Wow.
At one time, it was the largest hangar there. It was bigger than the city hangar. But now that's all, you know, you'd say surpassed easily. But it was interesting how, you know, the fact that, you know, how are we going to get this airport up and running? How are we going to maintain it? Will the community support it? And luckily, there were some people with some foresight to push hard, again, get a water park and the airport, you know, doing things in conjunction that survived it, because the mood was not there. And I remember walking into R.C. Bliss Ford, and old Bob Bliss, God bless him, you know, and he, well, kid, I had just started, it was 1977, how do you like working for Henry's company? I said, pretty good, you know. I actually drive a new car. You know, I never could afford one, but now I'm driving one for him. And I said, hey, what's
Henry's company?
Henry Ford. See, I was working
working
for Ford Motor before I went with Northwest Airlines.
Okay, I get it.
And, of course, he was the Ford dealer, still is. His
yep.
son is involved and all that yet. And it was just kind of funny. He says, Bob, I said, what's this area like? You know, I'm from northern Wisconsin, so I don't know much here. I'm a cheesehead, you know, I'm a economic refugee. All I got in my hometown is Tombstone Pizza and Weathershield windows. So I didn't want to make windows, and I sure the hell don't have to eat all those pizzas. So here I am. I'm over here, 3 hours away from home. So what's it like? What's Faribault like? What's Owatonna? What's Northfield? And it was just, again, that classic old simplistic humor. Well, he says, Northfield, everybody's a college professor. You know, that's the college town. Okay, cool. Good city. Very progressive. Little spendy, but lots of history. Oh, Rice County's History Center. Okay. I says, how about Owatonna? Oh, Owatonna. Everybody's a millionaire. You got Federated Insurance. Buzz Kaplan's Owatonna tool.
Oh, Buzz Kaplan.
Yeah. And I should tell you a little, I'll tell you a story about that in just a second.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I've had him on the air.
Oh, yeah, wonderful man. And, you know, Jostens, you know, he said, and then the farmers, they're all billionaires down there. Okay. Wow. Well, how about Faribault? Ah, yes, French town. And I says, what do you mean? He says, well, this is a blue-collar town. Very, very blue-collar. And, in fact, he told me a story. And I don't know if it's urban legend or not. I guess I really haven't followed it much. But he said, I think, it is, according to Jim Glynn, it's true. Back in the late 50s, a company wanted to locate in Faribault. And the city council says, absolutely not. We won't want to be noted for your product. And I says, well, Bob, what kind of company was that? Well, they relocated to Batesville, your namesake, Indiana. I says, you mean, yes, the Batesville Casket Company, which, you know, employs over 6,000 people. It was a huge, but they wanted to come in the worst way and locate in Faribault, but the city council says, no, we don't want that. Plus, at the time, they didn't want wages to get a little out of hand, you know. So that was kind of the motive there, you know. So again, it was businesses coming in were stifled. Well, everything in life changes. So we've got new people involved now in Faribault for years and years now. And you can just see the prosperity, and that's well deserved, because this reminds me of the Fox River Valley over in Wisconsin. You've got, you know, Green Bay, Fond du Lac, Oshkosh, Appleton. I mean, again, over there, all those industries and that are there, it's, you know, and then you get to northern Wisconsin, we're all just Jack Pine hillbillies, you know. But every state seems to have its area in that. And
I have to ask you, mm-hmm. Let's pick a gem, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to Steele County, Rice County, and Dakota County.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the gem of those three airports?
Well, I would, in all fairness, Owatonna.
I would think that myself.
Owatonna was tattooed, in a sense, as the regional airport. They have two huge runways. And Buzz Kaplan, with Owatonna Tool, which manufactures tools for Ford, you know, Nissan, all their, you know, plus all other OTC tools, legendary. A little story about Buzz.
Can you hold that story while I take this final break this hour?
Absolutely.
Okay. Dave Bates is my guest on KYMN Radio. He lives west of Faribault on the lake, and if I can remember, the Dudley Lake?
Kelly Dudley.
Okay. Wow. Good memory, Wayne. Yeah. Rare.
What we have on our hands here, folks, is a good old-fashioned border battle. You know, loons versus robins, hot dish versus cheese curds, juicy Lucy's versus bratwurst. But even better, it's twins versus brewers. So choose a side, put down your fishing pole, and pick up your glove. For we are Midwesterners, and we support the Minnesota Twins. The first 10,000 fans on Friday, May 18th, get a sweet border battle t-shirt, courtesy of CenturyLink. That is how we border battle. This is how we baseball. Visit twinsbaseball.com.
Do you have an old junk or car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Well, the time is 9:54:27. Good morning on this Wednesday morning. Gosh, it's a beautiful day. It's going to be all day up to 81 degrees. Dave Bates is my guest, a storyteller extraordinaire, and you're going to tell me a story about Buzz.
Yes.
Kaplan.
And we'll do it here quick before
the
break.
5 minutes. You've got 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, I was going down to Fleet Farm, pick up some stuff. I had my son with me, David, and it was just your typical hot July day. And I was getting close to the, going by Cabela's there, and all of a sudden, you know, you see the airport, and I looked over, and I'll be darned. There's Buzz Kaplan's 1917 Curtis Jenny, you know, World War I trainer. Well, I own a Stearman, which was the World War II trainer. Well, Buzz is out. Oh, you know, got on the brakes, got off on the exit, drove in there, pulled up. Oh, wow, they're out by the airplane already. So went out there, and Brent Langer, who at the time was one of his main mechanics, you know, for Buzz, all his projects he had, he was, God, Bates, about time you got here. I'm about dead. I says, what's up? Oh, we're trying to get the old Curtis OX5. It was a water-cooled V8 engine. God, look at an old thrashing machine. And you had to hand prop it. You know, you had to grab it and spin it, and grab it and spin it. And I mean, oh, well, anyway, and it was hot, muggy, sweaty. He says, here, you got a strong back and a weak mind. Get over here and pull on this thing. And Buzz, hi, Batesy, how you doing? Good thing you got here. Okay. So I pulled it a few times, and I says, God, Buzz, there's got to be something wrong. You got gas, there's air. You sure your mag switch isn't screwed up or something, you know? And then Brett started checking stuff, you know, and sure enough, they found a wire was loose, and they finally fixed it. And so I propped it a few. Of course, now the engine's flooded, you know, so we had to, you know, turn it backwards and all. You know, how those people used to fly, I mean, just, you know, who would take a Model T and drive from here to California? But people would do it. Okay. Who would get in a Jenny, you know, takes off at 70 miles an hour, cruises at 70 miles an hour, lands at 70 miles an hour? I mean, you know, they're just, you were flying on the edge the whole time. Well, anyway, we got the thing started.
When you say flying on the edge, you mean like you could fall out of the sky if you went slower?
You went slower, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have that big a margin of error, you know. Where okay. My airplane, say, cruises 120, but it stalls at 45. So you've got, you know, room to maneuver is what they say. But we got it started. Brett jumped in the front seat, and old Buzz, you know, off he goes. And we watched him, you know, and okay, let's get down to Fleet Farm. Off we went. Well, that night on CCO News, all of a sudden, oh, tonight there was a tragic crash of a World War One, and oh my God, my mouth dropped. A local favorite, Buzz Kaplan's old airplane, da da da, evidently came in contact with some wires, you know, and things like that, and oh boy. And Buzz was killed. In fact, he died on the way over to Mayo. And Brent Langer was really busted up because that has a wooden fuselage held together with wires, wire braces. Well, when they went down, the engine fell back into Brent's lamp. So he had broken legs, pelvis. Oh, my God. Thank God he was a good, healthy young kid. He survived. In fact, he runs, has Buzz's old hangars and all that and restores old airplanes. And, of course, Buzz really wasn't injured that bad. But as my neurologist wife said, when people get in their mid to late 70s and 80s, yeah, a lot of times just a sudden stoppage. You know, that car crash that, you know, say a 40-year-old would probably easily survive, well, your electrical system gets a little corroded. And a good old shake or bang, and they just couldn't keep his heart going. They literally all the way over, and so we lost Buzz, who was a legend, of course, in the area.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
And but so sadly, I can claim I was the last time Buzz, as we say, took his flight to the west, or as we say, he's gone west. That's right. That came about in World War One. Yeah. What happened? That was, we don't call them funerals or anything like that. Nope.
He's gone west.
He's gone west. Till the sunset.
Those three jet airplanes. On what amazed me is they put them up,
yep,
and then they had to move them.
Yep.
And let's talk about that after the break.
Oh, that's a little fascinating story in itself.
Yeah. And
they're still here.
I know when I drive south on 35, I always look for that.
Yep.
I'm just like a little kid.
That is world famous.
We'll talk about it after the break. By the way, the guest this morning that you're listening to is a fellow by the name of David Bates. Some people say Batesy. Some people call him Dave. And he lives west of Faribault on the Kelly Dudley Lake, and he is a pilot, and he owns his own tail dragger, Stearman, and it's a biplane, and it's flown from the rear seat, and the passenger is in the front seat, like Snoopy, and I have an opportunity to go up with him sometime this summer when the weather is good, and I'm really looking forward to it. But right now I look forward to the news on KYMN 1080 AM and, of course, the 95.1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota. It's 10 o'clock.
Testimony revealed summit shaky. I'm John Trout. A Senate committee has released new documents on that Trump Tower meeting, the 2016 encounter with a Russian lawyer where Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort were reportedly expecting dirt on Hillary Clinton.
Among this 2,000 pages that are being released are some notes that Paul Manafort took on his phone and were printed out, obviously, and have now been released as part of this, the release by the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Evan Perez reporting. Transcripts reveal Trump Jr. testified under oath that he did not communicate with his father about the meeting before it happened. Threats from North Korea to scrap the meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un next month are something the administration says they've planned on.
The White House reaction to North Korea's Wednesday threat to cancel the Trump-Kim summit came from Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. On Fox News, Sanders laying out the current expectations.
We're still hopeful that the meeting will take place and we'll continue down that path. But at the same time, we've been prepared that these could be tough negotiations. The president is ready if the meeting takes place. And if it doesn't, we'll continue the maximum pressure campaign that's been ongoing.
Sanctions on North Korea remain in place, perhaps what the North would like to see eased before the summit as a U.S. show of good faith. Bob Costantini, Washington.
The U.S. Geological Survey says a major eruption of the Kilauea volcano is imminent. More than 20 fissures, cracks in the earth have opened up.
The other issue here is the main crater of Kilauea, which yesterday sent a massive ash plume more than a mile into the sky, blanketing the area downwind. People in that area, they're being told to stay indoors or at the very least wear a mask if they're going outside.
Scott McLean reporting. The Senate Intelligence Committee has just voted 10-5 in favor of Gina Haspel, President Trump's nominee to be CIA director. She's expected to be confirmed by the full Senate as soon as next week. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing
still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on The One, 95.1 FM, out of Northfield, Minnesota. And, of course, in September, celebrating 50 years serving the Kim Listening area on 1080 AM. My guest this morning is a fellow by the name of David Bates. And David has been my guest on several occasions. And, David, I've had comments from people that said, you know, that guy that you had on the air this morning, yeah, boy, he sure knows how to talk. Compliment, not criticism. And I love stories. And before the break, we had brought up those triple planes. And you can tell a little bit more about that and a story about Buzz Kaplan. Mm-hmm. But that was a museum, mm-hmm. and I knew the guy that ran that museum the first time. I'm not going to remember his name. But anyhow, those planes just fascinated me where they were. What was going to eventually happen with that?
Well, those were Air Force T-5s, trainers. They were basically about the first supersonic jet trainer. So that would be, in a sense, what we would call like an advanced trainer. You would then transition into the, you know, F-4 Phantom, you know, all these fancies in the 60s. That jet was actually designed in the late 50s. So, I mean, good Lord, it's been around 60 years, but yet it still looks just, you know, it was built by Lockheed, came out of the Skunk Works, the people that made the SR-71 and the U-2 and everything. That airplane is still used in many, many countries. In fact, last November, when the wife and I were over in Vietnam for 2 weeks, we stopped at the War Remembrance Museum, which basically is all of our junk that we left there. And here are two F-5s made in full combat version, you know, with Gatling guns and, oh, good Lord, rockets and everything. And they were used by the South Vietnamese Air Force. Well, anyway, getting back to that, and they're painted up in the Air Force Thunderbird demonstration team colors, world famous. They are in the point of where they're going vertical, and then they go in what they call a sunburst. In other words, it's like, in a sense, making like a flower ball, or what is it, you can see how much I know about flowers. I'm great on some stuff, but anyway, they're all a blossom, like it's like a blossom opening. And of course, they would have their smoke systems on, so it's all white, and they all spread off into 6-7 different directions and all that. Well, that's what that's symbolizing. What we couldn't believe was, how the heck did Buzz Kaplan pull off getting T-5s out of Arizona? You know, at
the junkyard.
Yep, down in Yuma.
Yeah,
Davis-Monthan Air Base, where, I mean, that's where everything, when you know, they keep it, because just like old airplanes, you know, they get recycled. You know, like I say, my airplane 60 years ago was a high-tech World War II trainer. Now it's used by some old guy who just turned 64 for, you know, taking grandkids up for rides. So good Lord. Well, all these other third-world countries use our aircraft, and for, you know, doing their missions. So what we end up doing is finding out that he's going to have this, and we see the artist drawings. And my God, how that happened? Well, there was a lot of resistance from the Air Force. I don't know if people realize it.
I don't think so.
But this is a world. It's basically the world's finest gate guard. Now that's what people on our side of the fence call it. It was always customary to have an old fighter or something. So you go by Volk Field over by Camp McCoy, and you'll see, you know, these airplanes parked out there, and one or two might be on a pedestal, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know.
They used to have one in New Prague in the city park.
There you go.
Yep. Back in the 60s.
Oh, absolutely. 60s. Cities would get it. Well, you know, they handed out all those tanks from the Vietnam era.
Yeah, I remember one in mm-hmm. Broad Ripple, Indiana.
Yep.
We would climb the fence and get down and get inside those tanks.
Oh, absolutely.
As kids.
Yep.
And you had all these glory thoughts. And yep. when you think about it, what an uncomfortable place to be.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Now, I know you got a further story, but what really amazed me is, number one, where to get the planes, and
yep.
you helped explain that.
Right.
Number two, the engineering to have those planes almost upside down.
Yep.
And hanging on a yep. whatever it is.
Yeah, simulating full flight.
That burst.
Yeah.
Yeah, and How high? Do you know how high those are off the ground?
I think they're close to 100 feet off the ground.
Okay.
But the way he got the airplanes.
Okay.
Congressman Jim Oberstar, who passed away a few years ago, a good statesman. He was not a politician. We need more statesmen. We all know that. But anyway, he was a fantastic statesman. He basically pulled some strings, plain and simple. And for Buzz Kaplan, he got the Air Force to release three airplanes that would no longer be, they had so much time on the airframes, they couldn't be flown. Now, they were using them for parts. So they basically what they are, of course, is, just parts airplanes. So, but he authorized it and got it done. And what's amazing is the engineering, those pedestals, you'll see it's all truss and everything.
Yeah.
Buzz and his engineers, which, of course, that's what he runs, the engineering company, they engineered that with outside help to withstand 200-mile-an-hour winds. And the reason being is we get those little nasty things like St. Peter had a few years ago, those tornadoes.
Yeah.
Or as my grandmother would say, that's the finger of God coming down, getting the bad people.
Okay. Sounds like an old wife's tale.
Yeah, and that was Grandma. She passed away in 1970, and I can, I think we should get out of this community, Grandma. I think God's coming after us. Well, anyway.
Live in Oklahoma or something?
No, that was just old. And then the other thing is the fact, I always remember I was sitting over Lake Pepin, and I saw this beautiful rays of sun coming through the clouds, and I says, Grandma, what's that? Oh, that's God's graces going down over there. We should jump over to the Kelly's farm and go get some. Sit down and eat your lunch, Typical grandma, right? I mean, just, okay, love them.
So we're talking about the trusses or whatever you call them.
The trusses were designed to withstand 200-mile-an-hour winds because it looks like those airplanes are literally just sitting out there all on their own. And they come down in just a simple truss deal to a huge concrete base and all this. Okay. Well, what's amazing is that was put up at the museum that Buzz built. We all thought that, that's going to be Buzz's mausoleum. That's his gift to southern Minnesota for, Owatonna Tool and his love of aviation. And, he built world-class old amphib airplanes. And, he was a legend. Simple as that. And sure enough, all of a sudden, he decided, nope, I'm selling my museum. He sold all the airplanes, and I can't make a profit. And it was just kind of quirky. But, Buzz, I thought, nope, got to move on. And, that was it. End of discussion. Okay. So, sure enough, now it's, a church, Christian World Church. But then, what's going to happen to those beautiful, F-5 fighters? And everybody just thought, well, the Air Force Academy. And rightfully so. They're going to come in and put their foot down and go, no, that belongs as a gate guard at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. Because they've got a couple jets out there, but nothing like this. And, of course, the government's not going to spend the money to, make a gate guard with, Buzz had, needless to say, some funds, and he, what he wanted, he got. And so we just figured, nope, it's going to be, taken down and trucked out, and oh, what a sad deal, because really, ran on I-35, it was, in magazines and aviation world, that was touted the finest gate guard, in other words, aircraft display in the world. That's kind of cool, just, right in our backyard. At little Owatonna Airport. It's not at MSP. You would think it'd be over there, or it should be at the Air Force Academy. And logically, it should. Well, by George, James Oberstar and all that just says no. If the city will move it, the family said, in fact, the family helped pay for it. Well, anyway, the city took over then the control of that display. So little, in our deal, it's actually kind of bigger, but in the scheme of things, little tiny Owatonna Airport has the world's finest military gate guard. I mean, it's just the, David and Goliath, it's just how that ended up sitting there, and I'm sure there's the...
I can't imagine the cost of moving that.
Oh, God. They had to get in the huge cranes and take everything apart. Then they had to reinspect everything because, in winds, those, you don't notice it, but they're moving up to a foot. In engineering, things have to move. Or you crack and break. Trees move in the windstorm. Once they stop moving, they break then, okay? And so that was a well-engineered display. And it's just, it's just one of those quirky things that...
If you're anybody traveling south knows where they're at. They see them from the freeway.
Yeah, they're lit up at night.
So what if you wanted to go and be right under them. Mm-hmm. Take a picture, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
How do you get there?
You take the exit. You either take the Cabela exit and then just drive the frontage road to the airport. And so there's one on either end of the airport and Cabela's. And it's on the west side of I-35. And I, of course, typical native, you know, now I guess I've been here 35 years. I can't tell you what the exit numbers are or the county roads, but the exit for Cabela's or the exit right after Cabela's.
Is that 14, Highway 14?
No, 14 would be the next one down.
Okay.
No, that's a ways down yet. Yeah.
But all right.
It's very obvious where you basically go to Cabela's.
Does it have an area that's open to the public?
Oh, yeah.
To
yeah, you walk right up and stand underneath and, you know, have the kids there. They've had wedding pictures done there, and then the guys will park their old antique cars there. Things like that.
Can you wheel your old Stearman up there and have a picture?
It'd be a little tough to get it off the taxiway over there.
Okay.
But again, it's just one of those quirky deals that through the audacious Buzz Kaplan and the clout of Jim Oberstar, they were able to put together that. I can go to Europe and talk to my friends over there, and I'll say Owatonna, and of course, you know, getting a German to say Ototona or something, but they all go. Jet airplanes, Air Force Thunderbirds.
Wow.
You know, and then they all, is that where they're kept? No. Is there an air base there? No. Why are they there? And I have to tell them because a very influential man got them put there and basically paid for all the expense and engineering.
Wow, and that had to be a ton of money.
It was, the family would never release how much Buzz put, but again, that was something Buzz wanted.
You know, when I first started this show in 19... when I was 64.
Okay.
And so that's 13 years ago.
Okay.
I had Buzz on,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't appreciate what he has accomplished in his life because he was just so down to earth.
Yes.
And, yes, we talked about, you know, his business and all that. And he's the one that turned me on to the museum to go down and check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave me some passes to hand out.
Yep.
Have you been to the one in Granite Falls?
I've been out there. In fact, my son knows Ron Fagan. That's who runs it.
Yeah.
And, in fact, he holds, I believe it's in June. I'd have to go online. But he...
Before you finish that thought, let me run a break here and tell folks what Granite Falls is.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment on KYMN Radio. I'm Wayne Eddy, and you're not...
Hey, it's your stomach again. Subway has all new signature wraps, and around the water cooler, the other stomachs can't stop talking about them. Chipotle Southwest Steak and Cheese, Turkey Bacon and Guac, Rotisserie Style Chicken Caesar Signature Wraps. Listen, if I'm honest, as a talking stomach, I don't have a lot of life experience. But I do know one thing. These signature wraps are jam-packed with meat. So what are you waiting for? I'm growling over here. Subway. Make it what you want.
The skills you can develop as a soldier in the Army National Guard can give you an edge in the high-tech job market of tomorrow. The Guard offers career training to take advantage of your skills in science, technology, engineering, and math that can help give you a leg up to a high-paying and rewarding STEM profession. Get a head start on your career while earning money to pay for college. Log on to NationalGuard.com to learn about all of the STEM career opportunities in the Army National Guard.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. At this station.
Good morning, everybody, and that's 10:16:13 if you want to know the exact time. Plenty of sunshine out there on this Wednesday morning on May 16th, and the year is 2018. And my guest is David Bates, Dave or Batesy. And I had, through a friend of mine, Yogi Repman, and others, they brought over a Second World War boxcar that took Jews to the encampments where they were all killed. And I believe that boxcar is in Granite Falls now. Mm-hmm. And then I learned, is it Fagan?
Ron Fagan.
Fagan. Might join me on the air when it's convenient, et cetera. He might even fly over here and land at Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
But... tell the folks what that is like. Okay. I know several people that have been there, and it's certainly, you say, Granite Falls has this? Kind of like the Owatonna and the airplanes.
Very much so. Ron Fagan made his mark in design, engineering, and construction of ethanol plants all across the upper Midwest. Okay. Buzz you know, ran a tool factory. So you got to have something that generates some revenue. Well, that's where Ron generated it. And just a quirk of luck, he liked World War II stuff. And he got his start in Warbirds. In other words, the fighters from World War II. His little company over there, Fagan, you know, Warbird Rebuilders, they found a niche. They could restore and almost manufacture a brand new P-40. And what's the P-40? It's the legendary Flying Tigers that were over in China. You know, that Curtiss fighter, single-engine fighter, had a V-12 Allison in it and with the big shark's teeth. Which just, you know, you think it's crazy, but it actually terrified the Japanese because, again, the Eastern, you know, traditions met. Well, his mechanics over there meticulously rebuilt. Literally just take a data plate and a bunch of, you know, main parts and make new wings, new fuselage. There's plenty of Allison V-12s around because it wasn't the most popular engine. In fact, most of them ended up in tractor pullers, you know, those crazy guys. And so he's got a ton of those. They're rebuilt. And with our technology nowadays, they can build new crankshafts, new pistons. You know, they'll be around forever. And they make modern improvements with the engineering of the metals allow these engines to perform wonderfully. So he's been doing that. He's had grand champions at, like at the Oshkosh Air Show. Well, then he got into restoring. He did a P-38.
Oh, that's a cool plane.
The twin engine, yes. In fact, again, Lockheed airplane, unbelievably complicated, had the problems of it would go into a dive. A good friend of mine, Del Ryland, who ran Ryland Ford, and I remember the first time I walked in there, and he used to be a Ford executive. He bought the franchise in like 1974, right at the start of the big taconite boom.
Where?
Up in Duluth.
Okay.
Made a ton of money. And if you can picture, a very handsome man. But he had it, as we all...
Excuse me, do you have a mirror?
A what?
A mirror.
Why is that?
Well, you said to picture a very handsome man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No.
Over your head? Okay. Okay, go ahead. I like your enthusiasm. Okay.
Well, anyway, I just got, because this is such a story.
Okay.
He was just noted by all the Ford reps. What a you-know-what person, you know. Because he'd chew up in these, you know, Ford reps. What are you going to tell me? You know, I was back in the day when Ford was really a company. You know, he's just, you know, hard ass. Pardon the French, okay? But anyway, I stopped in there and I said, "Hi, are you Mr. Ryland?" "Yep." "Who are you?" "Well, I'm Dave Bates, your new parts and service rep." "So?" And I said, "Well, so buttons on your buns." He says, "You better sit down. You and I need to talk." And then I looked behind him and here was a picture on the wall of a P-38 fighter. And here's this, you can see, very handsome at the time, Del Ryland with his Mae West on standing next to this fighter. And I said, right away, I said, "Sir, if I can ask, who's that guy up in that picture?" By now, Dell looked like he had a lot of miles on him. In fact, he was fighting alcoholism, which he did the rest. I think he's like 96, still alive. Okay. And he said, "That's me." "That's you?" "Of course." "Yeah. And you? You look a little chubby. You look like a typical northern cheesehead. Who are you to say who's handsome?" I said, you know, so that's how we started. But amazingly, we became best of friends because then I said, I fly a Stearman. He turned around on his big old desk, you know, and, "You fly a Stearman? You know what a Stearman is? That's the pilot maker. You had 10 hours to solo that airplane or else you were going to be a navigator, a bombardier, or a gunner. You, how long did it take you to solo?" I felt like I was talking to the Wizard of Oz, you know. 5.4 hours. "What's the end number?" "I'm going to look it up. 3976 Bravo. He went on the FAA site. "Bates. What's your last name?" "I told you, Dave Bates." "Okay. Tell me about your airplane." From that point on, we became best of friends. I brought him some old models of John Deere tractors because he grew up on a farm, you know. He would tell me stories. He brought in his photo album. I said, he flew out of Italy up into southern Germany. He escorted bombers, okay?
The B-24s, probably?
B-24s.
Yeah.
And he would, of course, they would move as, you know, the lines would move. I said, "Did you ever shoot down a German airplane?" He says, nope. We weren't allowed to, you know, leave. And that started by the Red Tails, you know, the Afro-American pilots. And so we were...
The Tuscany
airmen, yes. Yeah. And so we weren't the hot rodders like up in the northern Europe where they could take off the Jaegers and get their 15, 20 kills, you know. We were assigned. In fact, we would be court-martialed if we were to attack the fighters and that. Well, he says, I heard them. But once they saw how many of us, and once they, we, the P-38, the Germans called it, I don't have the German name, but it was called the fork-tailed devil. Because in a dive, it could go supersonic. In fact, to a point where controls would lock and you were in a death dive. Lockheed developed some anti-brakes, air brakes in that fort that, you know, solved that problem. But anyway, I said, well, did you do anything other than just cruise around, you know, because I got to a point where we could kind of push each other's buttons a little bit. I says, well, you must have had it pretty good then. You just kind of flow along with those big bombers and that. He says, oh, no, because he says, once we got done with the bombers, just like the Tuskegee boys on the way back, it was time for us to fly. And now we had the rockets and you know, I had, you know, five machine guns and a 20-millimeter cannon in front. Targets of opportunity. I was good for finding those steam engines, he says, and blowing those things up. And he says the biggest problem was making sure you didn't run into the shrapnel, because that'd pull you down. And I said, well, did you have any close calls? And he says, well, look at this picture. I said, oh, my goodness. Whose airplane is that? It's my airplane. I'm in the cockpit. And here he had it, taking a picture. He always had his little Kodak, you know, whatever he used to call those little things. He had a picture of half his wing blown off.
Brownie.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
And that engine, you could see, had feathered. In other words, the prop had stopped, and he puts him straight ahead for less wind resistance. I says, oh, yes, he says, thank God that P-38 was a fighter with two engines. That's what got me back to, I can't remember, but the Italian little air base he was working out of. And that, you know, again, came home. That generation, oh, he got hit by a flak burst. He said, it knocked me. The airplane went into a roll upside down. I was only at 2,000 feet. I thought I was dead, but I got it turned around. Kept one engine full power, opposite rudder. I still had my rudders working and got back up to altitude. Two of my buddies stayed with me, you know, and we got back. And, I mean, that was Del Ryland. I mean, here's a guy that, in all fairness, he looked like an old drunk. And yet, you know, what he went through, and a little story about his activity. One day, the sales manager came in on a Sunday. He was in his boat. He had a big boat because it was Lake Superior. And he was running it in the shop. And he had a little too much to drink. And he was fishing out of it with the engine running. So needless to say, the engine finally seized up and all that. But that just, and of course, and he would say, yeah, that was my liquid days. And he... you know, was strong enough, and with help from his family, everything, and his wife was a wonderful gal, he was able to not let alcohol control his life, and became a, you know, fantastic, sold the dealership eventually, and went back to his home area in South Dakota and hunted pheasants. But that, you got me off target there, but that was Del Ryland with the P-38s. Ron Fagan has one. He has a P-51 Mustang that's in perfect condition, might as well say brand new. He just bought a Hellcat that's very famous in that. It was with the Confederate Air Force for a long time. They're in the process of making that brand new. And, of course, he's got a group of P-40s. But what he's also...
What do you mean Confederate?
Well, that was the group started in the late 50s, early 60s by a group in Texas. And that's, of course, the old days. Now they call it the commemorative, because it's more appropriate, and rightfully so. But anyway, they're the ones that, thank goodness, went into the Davis-Monthan and all these boneyards, into schools and stuff like that, and collected all these old World War II airplanes. Because, in all fairness, people wanted to move on with their lives. You know, a lot of the vets and that just, you know, didn't want much to do with the old... Nowadays, oh my God, a P-51, you know, that's the big star down at Oshkosh Air Show and all that. But they were all getting ground up and made, you know, Coca-Cola pop cans and get the economy going. Well, these guys went out and saved them. And because of that, we still have them. The classic is the B-29 Fifi, you know. Now there's one more flying like that. But they went out, and a good friend of mine, Randy Sohn, he helped. He was one of the guys that actually flew it out of Davis-Monthan.
And my dad was a navigator on a 29.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
He didn't. I'm getting the reason why on his death I was able to read his report card from, I forget the town in Texas where they were training World War II pilots. Mm-hmm. And I saw that he failed. And then he did, like you said, mm-hmm. if you don't do the pilot. 5.5 hours or yep. the pilot pass,
right.
they move you into a navigator.
Well, absolutely, because you're still, I mean, these were the cream of the crops. These were the kids that were in college, ready for college, college qualified, and they needed navigators.
Yep.
I'll make it plain and simple. I need a ball and string to navigate. I can basically fly, you know, pretty good with anybody, but I'm not a very good navigator up there.
Well, that's
getting back to Ron Fagan, he runs a air show and a military ground show, like the one that's coming in Dundas this weekend. He's got Sherman tanks, half tracks, all this stuff. So he's got into airplanes, which now he's also turned to all the ground equipment. And so at the Granite Falls Airport, he has a couple huge hangars, and they're all filled with this stuff, and then he brings them out, puts them on display, and they all operate. And that's a wonderful part. They're not just static displays like you'd see at the Smithsonian or some of the museums. So that's coming up, I believe, sometime in June. My son knows Ron, and Ron has seen our steerman and all that, and so he's been out there. And so that's just, again, you know, why Granite Falls? Well, that's where Ron grew up. Simple as that.
And this fellow that I know, Yogi Repman, who got that boxcar through his efforts and from Germany, and knowing now that you know this guy, and I think that would be a nice motorcycle trip to go over to Granite Falls, check it out, ask Mr. Fagan if he would join me on the air to tell his story, because it would be fascinating.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how far is that then from the casino?
Oh, not far at all.
I mean, oh,
you know, you could all turn that into a really fun trip.
Yeah,
and it's an easy drive, too. I mean, that's just a straight road all the way out there and back.
Firefly.
I've taken some friends from our friends in Stuttgart. We've rented a modern airplane and flown out there.
I've only come across Granite Falls just touring on the motorcycle or in the convertible. I know it's west. I really never gone there. I just ended up there driving around.
It's out by Montevideo in that area. It's on a river. It's a river town. You go through there, what was it, 2-3 years ago when they had the 75th Sturgis. I got my college buddy talked me into riding my old Harley out to Sturgis. Well, on our way back, by George, we went right through, I forget, is it might be even 14, I think. I think it's 14. Anyway, we went through Granite Falls. We stopped in and saw the museum real quick and that. But it is definitely a world class. And here's the other thing that's so neat. You walk into, and this, of course, being a gearhead, you know, I love the wrench part of it. You walk in, here's a hangar, okay, go in, and oh my God, there must be 100 Allison V8s all stacked up. And over there's fuselages of P-40s, you know, old original ones that they still find, you know, in the jungles of Burma and wherever. I mean, they're, you know, they're all corroded and all this stuff, but like Ron says, just my patterns. And he'll duplicate it and all that, and then take the data plate off, as they say, you know, take the radiator cap off and drive a new car under it and make a whole new, you know, airplane with it. But it just, so you look at the hardware that he's got and has collected around the world, and in all fairness, he's a very wealthy man. And sometimes I'll hear my buddies go, oh, those rich guys, you know, all those rich guys, they have all the toys. But thank goodness there's some of those rich guys that don't just collect art, you know, things like that actually spend the money, put the resources in to restore old cars, tanks, tractors, airplanes, good Lord, you know, things that us common people, just we don't have the financial horsepower to do. They take the time, hire the mechanics, buy the equipment, and fully restore this stuff so we can enjoy them, and they invite us into their toy land. You know, the only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. So you go get to see these events.
Good. That's good logic. I like that. Have you ever been to the graveyard in Tulsa?
No, I have not. You mean in Tucson down there?
You know, I was sitting there and I said, no, it's Tucson.
Yep. Davis Monthan. It's one of those places. I've been to Tucson. My grandfather used to winter out there. You know, the old dairy farmer would go out there. And I never took the time to go to Davis Monthan. And now he's passed away, good lot, 20, 30 years ago. But I just, next time the wife and I get out in that neighborhood, we're going to drive down there. I know I'll hear my Italian neurologist going, boring. But, you know, I'll put her into she can go walk the desert trails for a day, and then I'll drive down to Davis-Monthan. And what's so neat is you've got the military base. And they love tourists, you know. The government wants to, you know, here's what we do. We don't just throw things away. We mothball them because, you know, we may need the parts or another country needs them, and we'll sell them. And they have basically air-conditioned vans, and they take you out, and they'll drive. And you see row out here, B-52s lined up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Here's C-130s. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
And tankers and airplanes. They know now you don't just chew them up because you can reuse them. You know, and the parts. Well, anyway, the B-52, which first flew in 1950, is still our number one land-based bomber. And what's it been, 60 years? Almost 70 years. So it's fascinating. Plus, right across the street, the road, is, I can't remember, but it's a private, Prima, P-R-I-M-A, museum. And what they did is when they got down to like only one or two airplanes left, and usually they're in pretty rough shape, they'll never fly, you know, they would then finally sell it to a scrapyard or something like that. Well, back in the 60s again, this old fellow would, you know, that's the last Fairchild, you know, experimental airplane. They only built two of those. And I'll pay the scrap price because I'm going to put it over here. And, of course, the old Warbird people all loved that. Even the people in the Air Force loved it because... here, a private party pays some money, and then they'll display. So just across, now you get to see all these cool experimental. Holy smokes, they had some weird-looking airplanes.
I went through the museum. As a matter of fact, I think I even bought a spoon or something.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I figured I got to contribute to this.
Right.
But what the graveyard in Tucson mm-hmm. looks like from the ground
yep.
is nothing compared to seeing it from the air.
Yes.
It's just unbelievable.
It's huge.
If you want to use football fields, it's like 10 football fields.
It's got to be. Yeah. It's huge. And
20 maybe.
Oh, yeah. And I think, I know during certain times of the year, the private air museum has a little helicopter deal, you know, and you'd be giving you $20 and they take you up for a 10-minute little run over it. And my buddy brought back, you know, his little... You know, we all have these little smartphones now, so he took his video. And he's just, and of course, typical military, right? All these airplanes lined up perfect, this style, then that one. I mean, it's just, it's almost art. You know, it's crazy. And of course, it's the desert. You know, that's where, you know, all us old farts, you know, we all head down for the desert or try to in the winter. You know, someday I'll be able to. But no, it's a perfect place for storage because of lack of moisture. And the corrosion is just nil. And they'll seal off the cockpits from UV light, and they'll cover up the end, you know, anything that needs to be, you know, that's why they call it mothballed.
Mm-hmm.
And we mothball them, just as grandma would mothball her old mink stole, say, in the deal, you know. Someday I may need that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was the idea. So that's how, because my kids would always ask, are there moths down here? No, there's no moths down here, you doorknob. This is the desert, you know. Well, why do they have to put mothballs in them? Oh, for God's sake.
Well, that's, you know, you got to teach them that. But here's the deal. I would imagine if you're going to buy, let's say, a really nice classic car,
mm-hmm.
and the car has been in Tucson or mm-hmm. Phoenix or whatever all of its life, whether it's a 57 mm-hmm. Chevy or whatever, that would be an advantage than buying one from the Midwest and upper East Coast.
Well, even and that's, again, my world. Yeah, if you can find something New Mexico. Here's the other thing that people forget. People go, oh, how about one from California? Oh, yeah. Oh, no. But why not? They don't use salt on their roads. No, but what's in the air?
Smog.
Yeah, and salt from the ocean. Yeah. People forget, like cars that come from Florida, or along the coast, you know, the southern mm-hmm. coast, or like Alabama, Mississippi.
Yep.
Boy, I'll tell you what, it's very sinister because that it doesn't happen. Our salt is, you know, very visible, happens relatively quick. But if you're looking for a 57 Chevy and it comes from, say, Mississippi or southern Texas or Florida, you've got to be very, very careful. You got to get inside those panels that you may see some horrendous patchwork and body putty put in, filling rust and all that. Because, again... our area, as far as storage, is actually very good. I'll give you an example. Our airplanes up here, when we park them for the winter, we don't have to pickle them, basically.
Pickle.
Okay, now there's another deal. You know, why are you pickling stuff, Dad? You guys are nuts, you know, I can remember myself. Well, it's just a term we use. That I don't even know where it came from, but I guess preserving,
yeah.
Right? You preserve, you pickle something.
Right.
Remember how Grandpa used to make you eat those pickled beets? Ooh, I hated those things. Well, you're going to do that to your engine? No. You go in and spray like WD-40 or Stable in the fuel. You do all this stuff. Okay. Well, what's so nice is down to about Des Moines, okay, if you draw a line across the United States, if you're north of there, for winter storage, our air in the winter is so dry. Oh, tell me about it. My fingertips crack. You know, I mean, just okay, you know. We dry out our skin up here, you know, talk to the gals, okay. But as far as preserving stuff, we don't have to worry about our, you know, inside of the engines getting corrosion on the valve seats, the pistons, and things like that. Now, there's nothing wrong, and if you want, take your plugs out. But you don't have to. In fact, all you have to do, if you just rotate your engine, maybe a quarter turn, like we turn the propeller a quarter turn once a month, just so that the metals early move just a little bit, so they aren't in one spot getting some little micro corrosion. Just they stay fine. My engine on my Stearman was put together in 1993. Now it was all new parts. You know, it's basically a brand new engine. It only has 304 hours. I'm going to add another hour to it tonight, and yet I've gone in with marvelous, a bore scope, basically, you know, a TV camera on the end, and look, you know, take a plug out, and it looks no corrosion or nothing. So now if you're below, you get into Missouri, Texas, and those places, you may think, well, I'll buy a car from Texas. Problem is, in the wintertime, they get that moisture in their air, and it sits there. It's hideous. It's there the whole time. And on maybe a dry surface in a cylinder or on part of your suspension parts, they start turning brown. For our stuff. Now, we have road salt. But anyway, so that's just a little tidbit there.
You see that motorcycle out there?
Yep.
It popped. I'm not kidding you. Boom, it was going. And it hadn't run since last October or September.
Same thing, my old Harley. I turn it over a few times. I keep it in the hangar.
Yep.
Now, I have to admit, now, summertime up here, we do get moisture. Okay, so if you have a hangar, especially with a concrete floor, you open your door, like on a day like today, where your concrete might be 60 degrees and your cars and all that, all of a sudden it's like a frosty mug. So I do run a dehumidifier, especially in the first 2-3 months of summer when we have our humidity.
And I got an old car with a four-barrel carburetor, and that kicked right off.
Oh, yes.
And I kept a trickle charge on them all winter.
All winter. You buy a little trickle charger,
I think I may have started them up both in, like, January, just to, like you say,
do.
It's 20 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. David Bates is my guest this morning, and he is a retired Northwestern Orient Airlines guy and also a pilot and owns a tail dragger, a steerman biplane, and knows a lot about aviation. Al, you have from WCCO, you ever been on his show?
No, I haven't.
You know who I mean?
Oh, Al Momberg.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Bill Cochran, and him are high school buddies.
Uh-huh.
And Bill, in fact, was my old boss at Ford Motor. He was a vice president of Ford Heavy Truck Division. Good Lord, he's got good genes in his family. His dad's 98, his mom's 95, and they still golf. I mean, they're just amazing.
Wow, that is amazing. Well,
Bill was the guy I took to Vietnam, but he and Al is a fantastic supporter of aviation.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
And the way it is, Momberg, we're talking about Al Momberg, he got let go by CCO or CBS out of New York. And in the meantime, I had him down here, and we I did a show with him on several occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And is that for me?
No, I think that was mine, but I just put on hold. It's one of my sons.
So. Okay.
Yes.
And so, anyhow, Al always helped me out during Defeated Jesse James days.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, one Friday night from 7 to 8 p.m., I was his guest on CCO for an hour promoting Defeated Jesse James Days, mm-hmm. which that was amazing. But anyhow, Malmberg and I are good friends. Mm-hmm. He's, of course, out in Colorado.
Yeah, that's amazing. He does his show out there. By the magic of radio, you think he's up in Minneapolis.
Yes, you would. And there were a couple of times when some of the personalities and some of the stations were lovingly referring to Twin City things, mm-hmm. and I knew they were sitting in Chicago.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, we will take this break, and we will be back with David Bates on the Wayne Eddy Affair. What we're going to talk about next, who knows?
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Three Links Auxiliary and Greenvale Park Elementary PTO will be co-hosting a fundraising rummage sale on Friday, May 18th, 8 to 5, and Saturday, the 19th, 8 to 2. It's located at our lodge on the corner of Oddfellows Lane and Highway 19 across from Post Brands. In the main room, everything is just a dollar. The treasure room will have special prices. We'll be serving walking tacos and treats. You'll find clothing, houseware, decor, books, puzzles, bed, bath, collectibles, a variety of perennials, and much more.
Soul to Soul, the world tour. Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Saturday, July 7th, Target Center. Two superstars, one amazing night. Saturday, July 7th, Target Center. The Rest of Our Life, their first album together. Available now. Tickets are on sale now at AXS.com.
Hey, that sounds like a lot of fun. By the way, I got to say, Cannon Valley Water Conditioning, they deliver to my house. They bring in that big 5-gallon bottles, and the guy carries them one-handed. And then, of course, he takes care of the water softener downstairs and can carry 2-3 bags at a time. It's amazing. They give great service. Cannon Valley Water Conditioning. Well, our guest this morning is a fellow named Dave Bates, and he's from west of Parable on the Kelly Dudley Lake. And his wife is a neurologist at Rochester Mayo, and he gets to run around, do interviews, and drive school buses. But I got to ask you, asked you boldly when I first have you on, will you give me a ride? And you said that you would. So
oh, yes.
That's coming up.
Yep.
But I want to know, have you ever had any close calls or anything happen to you in that biplane?
Oh, I think I've mentioned a couple here, but probably the one that, which now it's been well over 30 years, so I think the statute of limitations with the FAA has run out. And it was classic. You know, you're 24 years old, you feel you're invisible and bulletproof. Well, to make a short story long.
Good.
A friend of mine had purchased an old Stearman. I had just finished my first one. So I talked my dad, a World War II tank driver from the 5th Division of Marine Corps. He drove those amphib LVTs that you see, you know, like coming up on Iwo Jima. I says, Dad, I'll do another Stearman for you. You can make some real money and get ready for retirement. You probably make $10,000 or so. And this is 30 years ago, so that was good money. He says, what are you going to do? I says, well, there's a Stearman for sale here in Medford, amazingly, Medford, Wisconsin. And the guy bought it from an old crop sprayer. But it's been sitting for about 5 years. He only wants about $5,000 for it. We can, I'll restore it, and we can probably get close to $40,000 for this thing. I won't charge you nothing for labor, and away we go. Let's do it. He says, well, okay. And, of course, my mother, oh, boy, this should be exciting. And she went back praying to St. Jude again. So, anyway, my buddy and I, another Ford rep, he was a pilot, and I had just gotten my license. And he probably had a total hours of maybe 60 times. So we went out to this guy's farm and spent 3 days getting this old airplane, you know, took the sprayer hopper out, put the front cockpit in it. And this thing looked just, you can just picture a rat. Okay. It had patches all over it, stunk like insecticide. I mean, you know, I'm sure my mom could always tell me I was working on it because she says, there ain't a fly around the neighborhood when you pull up, you know. So we got this thing started. Oh, my God, it smoked for about 10 minutes, you know, and coughed and barked like these old radial engines. And, of course, yeah, she kicked the tire, light the fire. Let's get this thing going. So we both looked at each other and, well, you want to fly it? And I had, you know, I had just flown mine just maybe an hour or two. And I said, well, you actually got a little more tail dragger time. Why don't you take it up? Okay. So off he goes and the farmer just laughs and we took off. And again, there's no license on the airplane. No certification.
You were both in the plane?
He went up by himself.
Okay.
Yep. And he wanted to get used to it before we flew it over to our friend's place, John Hatz. Then we were going to totally tear it apart and rebuild the whole airplane. But we didn't want to truck it over. That ain't no fun. Let's fly it over. Yeah. Okay. So he takes off, and it just roars off, and he rah. And, of course, wouldn't you know, when he lands in the big mud puddle right in the middle of the field. You know, that's where he sets in. It's going, poosh, now the whole thing's full of mud. And he taxis over. He says, come on, get in. Let's go over to Hatz's place. So we went from Medford, Wisconsin, about 30 miles over, is Merrill, Wisconsin.
So now you jump in the front seat.
Front seat. Yep. And there was no instruments in the front seat. We didn't put them in. I just had bare minimum controls, a stick and rudder pedals. And he says, you fly it. And if something goes wrong, you shake the stick back and forth, and I'll take over because at least I got the instruments in the back. Okay. So, off we go. We're heading east towards Merrill, and, of course, we've got no flight instruments. We just follow Highway 64 to John's airport. He had a private airport called Hay Meadow, you know, Acres. So we're flying along, and, of course, you know, we're only about maybe 1,500 feet above the ground, you know, typical dumb kids. And we're playing fighter pilot. You know, we're zooming back and forth, and, oh, God, it's just, you know, Snoopy's our co-pilot, and just having a hell of a good time. And we get over the city of Merrill. Merrill is about like Faribault, 20,000 people. And we went around the edge of it, like old John would tell us, you know. Thank goodness we did. Because then all of a sudden, I heard a clang, clang, you know, just bang, 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 bang. And the airplane shook so bad, you couldn't even focus on the horizon. And then bang. And whew, right by the side of my head, here goes one of the airplane's engine cylinders, blew right off. And, of course, at the same time, now, it all happened in a matter of a few seconds, but, you know, just how it seems long. That huge Hamilton Standard propeller just stops. Well, that 400-pound propeller stopping has a momentum. It took the airplane, almost tipped it upside down in the air. Well, luckily, you know, I got it right again, and I knew, you know, and now it's quiet. It's the only time pilots get nervous is when it's quiet. Okay. Oh boy. So my buddy Dave Melman, he's in the back cockpit, okay, and I'm shaking the stick. And he said it took me two hands, once we were on the ground, two hands to grab that stick. You were shaking it back and forth so fast. Because I was in a panic, needless to say. And so he took it, moved the airplane up and down, and luckily that airplane shook so bad, I did honestly think that the engine might break off from the motor mount and tumble to the ground. Now, that's really losing your engine because then, boy, you might be buying the farm because now the airplane's out of balance. And just like when you made paper airplanes, you know how they just tumble to the ground. You're out of control. You just bend over and go. You're on for the ride. Well, it stayed on, thank God. Again, I always say Sister Mary was always praying for me because my mom would always call her up. You know what he just did? He bought some old World War II airplane, the two of them. Oh, let's get back to St. Jude, you know. So thank God they took care of me. But anyway, I pointed down. There's the Merrill Airport. It's just like the Faribault one, you know, right on the main road, you know. And so, and we're, you know, and a biplane drops like a rock. Without power, there's so much wind resistance, you know, between the wires. So we're dropping and dropping. You can't go too slow or you stall and spin in. Well, my buddy had it, and he's, you know, pretty common sense, good pilot. We come in, now we're in the final descent, and I can see we're not going to quite make the runway. We landed in kind of like the pre-apron area, and we went through a drainage ditch, and we hit the ground at about maybe, 45 miles an hour, and we're bouncing along like this, and I'm going, oh, thank you, God, I'm not going to die. I might get an owie here, but I ain't going to die. And sure enough, I see the ditch coming. Oh, this should be interesting. About a 2-foot little, you know, curved ditch. Nothing too serious looking. But my buddy's hitting the brakes so hard that when we go through the ditch, he kind of locked up the brakes. The airplane goes, oh, you know, the famous SIH, you know, boom, we tip upside down. And so I'm hanging from my seatbelts, okay, on this big old biplane. And I hear gasoline hitting the hot engine, you know, from the fuel tank. And I'm going, Melman, get out of here. This thing could just go poof. And I says, but make sure you put your head, you know. And so I popped my military harness, put my hand above my head, fell to the ground. My only injury of the day was I had a little cut on my knee because I was wearing cutoffs, you know, it was in the summer. I ran about, oh, I suppose 20 feet from the airplane, turned back. Here he's still switching switches off. I says, Melman, get out of that airplane. That thing could blow up. Okay. And he forgets to put his hand. So he, boom, oh, my neck. Oh, for God's sake. So I run back, grab him by his collar, drag him about 20 feet. We're running on adrenaline now, okay? And luckily nothing happened. I mean, the airplane didn't explode. So we're sitting there with our holding our helmet and goggles, covered in kind of mud, you know. Oh, boy. Yeah, there's houses all around this airport. I wonder if they seen us. Yeah. Oh, Batesy, we're in trouble now. No FAA inspection, no current license, no current annual. Oh, they're going to have administrative fun with us, you know. Well, let's go down to the airport office. You know, this is just, again, a little airport like Faribault, you know. So we walk down there. The lady goes, oh, Bates. Yeah, hey, did you fly your steerman in? No, I bought an old used one. Oh, that old sprayer. I see. Where's it at? It's on the end of the runway. You guys okay? Yeah, we're fine. Use my phone. I got to go. She didn't want to know nothing else.
She just got
in her car and went to lunch.
How did she know you?
Well, I'd been into the Merrill Airport, you know, in my pilot training and all that.
Okay.
And so then, you know, I called my dad, and he, oh, my God, are you okay? You know, yeah, how's the airplane? I says, just the rudder's bent over, and the prop's a little bent, and the engine's toast, but we're going to put a 220 on it, the original military one. It'll be fine. Okay, I'll be right over. Call John Hatz. They both show up in their pickup truck. Well, typical dumb young kids. We walk back. We're going, geez, look at that big biplane sitting at the end of the runway upside down. And I grab hold of the tail. And I think if we push it and if we, you know, get it going, I think we can at least get it up on gear. So if somebody comes and just looks, I mean, it doesn't look like we flipped it upside down, you know. We just had a forced landing, you know. Okay, that sounds good. So we lift it up and we're two young, healthy guys. And, you know, the airplane's going up. Yep, okay, tail's in the air. We're pushing on the fuselage. And boom. Now it's sitting straight up and down. It's sitting on the landing gear. Oh, I says, Melman, you climb up on the tail and maybe you can. Hey, I just fell out of the sky and we're still alive. I'm not going to break my neck climbing up on the tail on this stupid old airplane. We're laughing, you know, and just, you know. And all of a sudden, here comes a twin airplane, engine airplane. And he comes in for a landing. He's on final. All of a sudden, you can see when he sees, you know, here's a big biplane pointed straight into the ground, and you can see the trail of the tires and everything. And all of a sudden, his airplane, he's waving because, oh, my God, what happened there? And we stand there, and we wave at him, put our thumbs up, and he smiled and put... He dropped off, must have been a commercial little deal, you know. He dropped off two people, turned around, roared by us, you know, gave the thumbs up at us, and just, I'm sure he was laughing the whole time. Well, anyway, making the short story long, my dad shows up, and we put a rope around the tail. We pull it over with the pickup truck. In a half hour, we had the wings off. They were in one pickup truck. The tail wheel was in the other, and we headed for John's shop. He was only about 4 miles away. So, oh, my God, we can't believe that we got out of there. No cops. You know, the FAA was never called. Oh, thank you, God. And so off it went. Well, that winter, we, you know, oh, and this was like in the summer, but by fall anyway, the FAA happened to stop in to see John Hatz. In fact, he's in the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame, and just he designed an airplane, the Hatz biplane. He's just he taught me how to fly. In fact, you have a local guy here named Ron Donner, and Ron also is from that Gleason area, and John taught him how to fly. Ron's a good friend of mine. He was at Northwest. So anyway, the feds walk into John's hangar. John, did you ever hear about two crazy kids that, you know, bought an old sprayer steerman and tipped her over at the Merrill Airport? You know, those damn kids, you know, da-da-da. And John, yeah, I heard about it. I don't know where the hell it ended up at, you know, but okay. Well, we were just curious, you know, and... You know, that's what gives aviation kind of a bad name. You get these crazy kids out there, and they fall out of the sky, and, well, we don't want them to get hurt. And John, oh, you're right. If they would have only looked right straight up in the rafters in John's big hangar, here are the wings with the N number with mud on them yet, you know, sitting right above their head, because John called me that night and said, you know who visited me today? No, who's that? The FAA.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah, I had to tell him everything. John. And then he started laughing and told me everything was okay.
The FAA to you is like the FCC to us.
There you go, exactly.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
We have on our hands here, folks, is a good old-fashioned border battle. You know, Loons versus Robins, Hot Dish versus Cheese Curds, Juicy Lucy's versus Bratwurst. But even better, it's Twins versus Brewers. So choose a side. Put down your fishing pole and pick up your glove. For we are Midwesterners, and we support the Minnesota Twins. The first 10,000 fans on Friday, May 18th, get a sweet Border Battle t-shirt, courtesy of CenturyLink. That is how we border battle. This is how we baseball. Visit twinsbaseball.com.
And this is the Wayne Eddy Affair, and the time this morning on this Wednesday is 10:58:03, which means we have about 2 minutes left, and I got a final question with my guest, Dave Bates. Dave, you are a bus driver for
Waterville Elysian School District.
And so you keep yourself busy. Still, school is going on.
Yeah, and I do strictly just special events because with my travel schedule with the wife and the mail around the globe, I do just special. In fact, tomorrow I take a group of sixth graders from Morristown to the Minnesota Zoo. I love doing that. And then Friday I take the seniors on their class trip. They elected to go to, you know, Valley Fair and at Clary Park up there for lunch. So, I mean, and I get paid to do that. That's the wonder, you know, it's just wonderful. So I, and of course, wrestling events, things like that, you know, football, the special events. And of course, a lot of the drivers there, we don't like driving up in the metro. You know, that's scary with a big bus.
Yeah.
But that was my world, so it doesn't bother me.
And of course, you're so an old trucker.
So I enjoy it.
Did you know, Waterville Elysian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember driving on 60 past Elysian, and they had a little billboard there with a picture and said, Home of Dean Curtis.
Oh, I haven't seen that, I guess.
Oh, it's not there anymore.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
But I said, and this is 50 years ago, when, or 20, 30 years ago, whenever they put it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you knew Dean Curtis from KDHL.
Right.
Yeah. Hell of a nice guy.
Yep. Oh, that's neat.
And what?
I says, that's neat.
Oh, okay. Do you know what his real name was?
No idea.
Zimprick.
Oh, my goodness.
Dean Zimprick. And he changed it to Dean Curtis. And he worked with KYMN Radio for a while.
Okay.
David Bates, you'll have to come back and tell us some more stories.
Be glad to. You give a holler.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My guest this morning, Dave Bates. And that concludes the Wayne Eddy Affair for today. And you are listening to The One. That, of course, is 95.1 FM. And in September, celebrating 50 years, KYMN 1080 Radio AM.
95.1.
The One.